Hey there. Welcome to the Her One Thing podcast, where we uncover the best tools, hacks, and strategies needed to finally take you from daydreaming to getting results so you can intentionally create a life you love. I'm your host, Kristen Zeyer. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of the Her One Thing podcast. Today we have a very special guest on the show by the name of Nick Hill. She absolutely blew me away with the amazing insight that she has into so many things around what it's like to be a woman who is going after her one thing in today's world. So I hope that her interview inspires you, and I hope you enjoy. All right, let's go ahead and get started. So why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and what brings you onto this podcast today?
So I am Nick Hill. I am a fashion designer and a founder, a course creator, and a wife, a small business owner, and just really passionate about helping other people in business navigate their way, especially in the beginning stages of starting, you know, like day one, day two, day three. Sometimes it's really hard to and overwhelming to figure out what to do next or where to go, especially if you don't really have a business background or mm-hmm. you haven't had the luxury of being able to see other entrepreneurs in your life kind of navigate that path. So I love doing things like this to share any information that I can to maybe help the next person.
Yeah, absolutely. So how long have you been in business?
I've been in business for myself it's either 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure why. I can never quite remember, but it's either 4 or 5.
Okay, that's amazing. So what led you to that point of saying, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to start this business?
You know, I always wanted to have a business. Ever since I was a kid, I always knew that I wanted to work for myself and I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I just didn't know what it would be in. Like most teenagers and kids, you're kind of figuring your way through life. And I actually went to school for something else before I ever went to school for fashion. I got a degree in forensic science and psychology, and, you know, on my way to grad school and thinking that I was going to be a forensic psychologist or some kind of psychologist. And, you know, obviously that took a different turn, and I ended up finding my way into fashion. But still knowing that I kind of wanted to work for myself. And, you know, fast forward some years and a lot of hard work later, I was in a position at a really great company here in New York City, which is where I live. And I just wasn't being treated properly. I was experiencing a lot of microaggressions and a lot of like really just poor behavior from my supervisor. And the one thing I did that was really smart when I got that job, I day one invested in my 401k pretty aggressively with the intention of using it at some point for seed money for my business. So, you know, 6 years later, when the treatment was just like abusive and not really anything that anyone would want their friend or family member to be working in. He's my husband now, but at the time he was my boyfriend. I came home and I was just like, I don't know how much more I can do. And he said, you know, maybe this is the time that you leave. And while I wasn't prepared to leave at that time, I don't think like mentally or even prepared with business. Like, yeah, I had a nest egg saved up to start my business, but I didn't do any of the other things that most people would probably do, you know, before they leave their 9 to 5. Like, I didn't really have a strategy in place. I didn't have a sales strategy, a marketing strategy. No strategies were in place at the time. I just had that seed money. which sounds like it might be a good problem to have, and I guess in a way it is, but there's so much more that you still have to do and you have to learn just to navigate that path as wisely as possible. But you know, that's not the way that it worked out for me. So I put in my 2 weeks, and I actually think I gave them a month notice.
Okay.
And I left, and I never looked back. And in hindsight, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me, because if I didn't have that, you know, supervisor that was putting me in some really racial situations, I probably would have just been comfortable and stayed. I might even still be there, you know, years later, because it checked all the boxes. The pay was great. I enjoyed the work. I got along with my coworkers. It was, you know, by all accounts, for some people, it probably would have been the job of their dreams. So I think in my case, it took something really ugly to happen in order for me to be honest with myself and push myself out of comfortableness, to become a little uncomfortable, to start pursuing what I said I always wanted to pursue.
It's so interesting how, in hindsight, when you look back at an experience or a situation, there's something that was so difficult or challenging to deal with, but in the end, sometimes you can be so grateful for that experience, because that is what was really the catalyst for you to stand up and say, okay, I can't continue down this path. I have to choose something different. And sometimes I think we almost need something that's going to just give us that nudge or push. And I'm not saying it's like what you experience is positive by any means, but that's definitely, it sounds like, really what pushed you, because you're right. You know, if it weren't for that, maybe you would have just been pretty comfortable in your cushy job and
still would have been there. No doubt about it. Like, there was literally no reason to leave.
Yeah.
So, you know, why would you rock the boat if it checks all the boxes? Mm-hmm. You know, crazy people jump off of a perfectly fine boat. so, you know, in my case, you're 100%, like, it totally, it required that for me to leave. And it was a really great learning lesson on top of that. Like, you know, I walked away knowing how I would never want anybody that ever reports to me or works for me to feel in their role, you know, regardless of gender, race, age, whatever it is. I would hope that anybody that ever works for me feels like they're valued and they're respected, whether they're doing, their performance is good or not, you know?
Yeah. So I would imagine you have employees, correct, that work for
not so much anymore. Okay. You know, COVID kind of changed some things. I did previously have employees and, you know, freelance work, contracted work, part-time help, interns, all the formulas of payroll that we employ when we're trying to build a brand. And to the best of my knowledge, I've always treated them properly. And I check in, you know, and like, how is everything going for you? Are you enjoying this? Is, you know, especially with the interns, because they're not getting paid for it. Yeah. So I almost feel really compelled to make sure that they feel like their time is valued and that they are contributing. And I give them, for the areas that they control, I give them autonomy and I give them power and I give them, you know, the ability to make a decision, and that's what the brand will stick behind. And I think especially at the intern level, it's a really great exercise because they're able to see that as it relates to business, their decisions have direct consequences. So, you know, if it, or a learning lesson, if it's like a really poor decision and there's a strategic reason as to why maybe we shouldn't do that, I'll educate them through that. But I think that it's really important that people feel valued. I think as an employer, that's how you build community. I think that's how you build and foster a team of people who are fans of what you do, especially in the beginning stages, because that's what it's going to require to get your idea out of the idea phase and into something tangible. And you need people who work for you who are diehard.
Yes.
And you get that through, you know, the way that you treat them.
I couldn't agree more. I could talk about just, you know, leadership in the workplace all day long, because it is a topic I am very passionate about. And it's so interesting to, one, see how the workplace culture, like, ideology is evolving. I think that, you know, I don't know, maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, it was very different of what is widely accepted and what is the norm. And then what, you know, if someone has a more progressive outlook on what that should be, it's so radically different. And I am with you. I think that all of those things that you listed are so important, and that only makes people want to contribute more and help the brand and the business grow more and just really believe in what it is you guys do. I actually was looking at the Instagram page for your business, and I noticed that, and correct me if I'm butchering kind of like the philosophy or outlook of your company or one of your core values, but it sounds like you really place an emphasis on helping women feel good in the skin that they're in. Is that right?
100%.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, even that kind of came about in a not direct way. Like, that wasn't ever my intention when I started. And now it seems so clear, like, oh, well, why wouldn't you do that? But at the time, I grew up in Florida. I'm Jamaican, and I come from tropical places. So swimwear and swimsuits are literally, like, so common for me, regardless of what you look like. You know, in certain regions of the world, it doesn't matter your body type, it doesn't matter your size. It's hot outside, you put on a swimsuit and you get in the pool, and it's literally, that's it. But once I got, you know, out of design school, I was managing a swimsuit shop, and the first time I really encountered, like, severe confidence issues of women in swimsuits was at that job. Mm-hmm. And I tell this story all the time, and it kind of is the beginning of this this brand ethos of mine. I was helping this woman in the fitting room, and she's trying on, you know, it's a swimsuit shop, so she's trying on all the swimsuits that she likes, and she looked phenomenal, literally, in everyone. Like, I'm not just saying that, she's not here, you know, she's not hiding mm-hmm. under the pillow. She, like, legit looked beautiful in everything she put on her body. And I'm literally, like, you know, mouth open, like, oh my God, like, you're phenomenal. Like, that looks great. That looks great. How are you going to choose? And she, however, while that was my experience of the moment, she was, like, kind of tugging and, you know, doing the things that we do when we feel uncomfortable. And she, you know, kind of hem and hawed over everything. And I'm like, this woman has got to be crazy. Like, what's wrong with her?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I said to her, you know, you have one of the most amazing bodies that I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, what is your workout routine? What are you doing? What are you eating? Like, please leave notes. I want to do what you're doing. Like, she, like, hands in the air, you are phenomenal. And she put her head down and she said, almost like, I don't really know the emotion, like, almost with a little bit of shame, almost with, like, embarrassment, almost with, you know, God, I feel stupid for my behavior, and now I'm going to tell this woman what I do. She said that she rode for the U.S. Women's Olympic team. So wow. She was, like, a legit Olympian.
Yeah.
Who would be at the peak of her fitness. And this was her behavior about her body in a swimsuit. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, if that's how she feels about herself, there's no hope for anybody else. Like, everyone else is just doomed. But I couldn't really accept that as an answer. Like, that doesn't really seem like, as women, that's what we get. You either have an Olympian body or everybody else is horrible. And she felt horrible in the Olympian body. So,
oh,
you know, what hope is there for me or for you?
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't really put much thought behind it then. I kind of just, like, tucked it away in the back of my head and kept on with my life and, you know, moved to New York, got the job, left the job, started my own business. And as I was doing, like, face-to-face sales and pop-ups here in New York City, it kind of reared its ugly little head again. And now it was every woman. It didn't matter what I thought she looked like. It didn't matter her race. It didn't matter her age, religion, socioeconomic status. Like, every woman was divulging with me whatever insecurity she felt about her physical body. So, and pointing it out, you know, mind you. And when you are helping someone with a swimsuit, many of you might not know this. You're probably the person trying the swimsuit on, but you're not the person who's helping the person try the swimsuit on. So you get all kinds. You get women who are very free and liberal with their body, and you're seeing them full on naked, and then they're pointing out all their flaws. You get some women who you only see their hand through the door, and they're not showing you anything, but they're verbally telling you what they don't like through the door. And then you kind of get a mix in between, where they might invite you in to see the swimsuit, but they don't want you to see them naked. And I don't mind any of those ways, like whatever makes the person feel comfortable. But no matter how she chose to try her swimsuit on, all these women are still sharing with me their insecurities, you know, their cellulite, their stretch marks, their C-section scar, their mastectomy scar, they're too fat, they're too thin. There, you know, it didn't matter what the issue was. They all pointed it out. And it got to a point where, especially as the brand owner, that became what I had to overcome in order to help her with her need, in some cases, an immediate need for a swimsuit. And I came home and told my husband and was just like, you know, it's so strange. Like, this is just so odd. And he was actually the one that said, you know, again, he has all the great ideas. he's like, maybe you should, you know, lean into that. And, you know, rather than, you know, dealing with it on a case-by-case issue, if you're finding that all the women you encounter are opening up with you and sharing this with you, then maybe that's what your calling should be. And it was kind of a weird way to like blend in the psychology, because remember, I have that psychology background.
Yeah.
It was kind of just a weird way to blend the psychology in with the swimwear, because it was really like therapy sessions happening in, you know, those fitting rooms, and getting her to really just love who she is the way that she is, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, like, what are you going to do about it right now in this moment, right here in the fitting room? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing you can do about it right now. So love is a much easier alternative, I think. Love of self and love of, you know, the bodies that we're in, these amazing bodies that they create life and they sustain life and they do so much. And we're so mean and abusive to our beautiful bodies.
So mean and abusive. And I absolutely love, you posted earlier on Instagram today about stretch marks. And I, you know, that really resonated with me. I have stretch marks. I'm not going to pretend like I don't. I have a child. And for a long time before like body positivity and Instagram, like I just was so ashamed. It's so much shame around them. And it's still hard, but I think just by women, more so than anyone, just coming like to terms with it and accepting and even just appreciating what that means and not, you know, just really understanding that this is just a part of life and it doesn't need to be good or bad. It's just neutral. It's just our body.
It is. It just is. And, you know, especially stretch marks that come from being pregnant and having children, they were necessary, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have a beautiful child because of those stretch marks. And, you know, sure, there might be a reality where you would prefer not to have the stretch marks, but you have them and look what they got you. And, you know, I think, like you said, they're neutral. They're not good. They're not bad. It just is. And mm-hmm. rather than trying to fight a battle that I don't think that any of us can ever really win, you know,
right.
I think it's so much easier just to embrace those things and, you know, reclaim our lives back and live our lives on our terms. And what's really interesting, particularly in fashion and beauty companies and these people, these corporations that are setting the tone for how you and I and her and she and they all feel about themselves are really coming from men. Yeah. Women are oftentimes not in the positions of power that are dictating what these beauty standards and body types are.
Yeah.
So the reason why it's so harmful is because it's not me and you at the board like, no, maybe we should show her cellulite, you know, or like, maybe we should choose some like curve models or women with shape or, yeah. you know, real women. Mm-hmm. That's not the conversations that are being had. And when you see what beauty is defined as by these people that are making the decisions, it's always, or traditionally, has been one very specific type of look, which is beautiful. But if you don't look like that, which, you know, 95% of the population doesn't, mm-hmm. Then what is that saying about you, that you're wrong? That and how can we be wrong if we're here? So it just, you know, something about it just didn't really seem right. And it seemed, you know, it can't be coincidental if every woman I'm meeting is feeling this way. Like, that's no more, including myself, like, you know, that's not a coincidence anymore. And I think that we should all just be kinder to ourselves, you know? And one of the things that I would say a lot to the women who were in the fitting room in this moment, and some of them are crying, some of them are like really having a moment. And I would say to them, like, if I said to you, or if, you know, that strange woman over there said to you, the things that you just said about yourself, you would be so offended. You would, you know, you'd leave me the worst Yelp review in the world. You'd be so like horrified. How dare I say these things about you? But yet you just sat here for 5 or 10 minutes saying the worst things about yourself in life. And why is that okay? Like, as the advocate for yourself, because you're not advocating for yourself right now, like, why is it okay for you to say such disparaging things about your physical form?
Yes.
And that's like an actual question that I'd want them to answer. Like, how is that okay? You know?
Yeah.
And it never was. Like, when they thought about it from like the outside, they wouldn't want someone to talk to them that way.
Right.
So, you know, you shouldn't talk about that yourself that way either. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing that it does, more than anything, is if there were children hearing their mother speak about themselves in that way, that's when it's the saddest, because you're teaching your daughter that this is how she's forming her self-image of herself,
yeah.
is through the way you view yourself.
Right.
And you know, now she's going to begin to notice these things about herself too, at an age where she's not even capable of really understanding what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're kind of teaching your son to have those same, maybe not approachable or achievable standards of beauty that those same men in those corporations have, right? Like, well, if mommy looks that way and mommy doesn't like it, then it must be wrong.
Right.
And women who look like mommy must also be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Kids aren't equipped to really understand how deep the psychology is, I think, for that type of talk. And
yeah.
It's like really important, you know, what we say out loud, not only to ourselves, but for the little ones that are listening.
Yeah. I always actually, like, recently I started to think about some of my own self-talk that I don't realize I'm having until I practice, you know, some self-awareness or meditation. And I'm like, wow, I am so mean to myself sometimes and I don't even realize it. It's just so automatic. And I've kind of stopped to think, what if I was saying these things to one of my friends? And I would never, ever even think those things about my friends. And so
you wouldn't want to be your friend anymore.
Right. It would just feel so horrible because I'm not going to judge someone else, you know, like that. So why do we do that to ourselves? It's so interesting. And I think that bringing that perspective to your brand, especially in swimwear, you know, where I think we feel some of our most vulnerable moments are probably when we're in our bathing suits, for sure. So to bring that is so powerful. And so, you know, I'm sure that, you know, throughout the course of building this business, your mindset of just even, you know, launching a business, leaving your 9-to-5 job, and, you know, building this up, all of the things that go into it, which I'm sure are just a million puzzle pieces. What are some of the things that you've had to do to really kind of coach yourself through or get through when you were experiencing setbacks or self-doubt or anything like that?
That's a really good question. For me, I can be a bit of a unicorn in a lot of ways. Like, I'm naturally extremely inquisitive, and I'm always seeking answers to the millions of questions that go through my head. My parents gave me like a children's dictionary when I was a kid because why was like all I ever asked. And they said that it was so consuming and demanding, and they didn't want to end my thirst for learning and knowledge, but they couldn't manage the amount of questions that I asked. So they got me a dictionary, and I had to refer to my children's Webster dictionary before I was allowed to ask any questions in the house. It was like a whole house rule.
Oh my gosh.
And I think it took me about a year and a half before I knew everything in the dictionary, and I like went to the big dictionary. So I say all that to kind of give you an idea of who I am, and what learning is like, you know, for me. And I just made myself a constant student. And the beauty of the time that we live in is information, if you want it, and if you know how to educate yourself, is literally available everywhere.
Yes.
As long as you can figure out a way to get the information, you can learn literally anything you want to learn. Mm-hmm. And you might not be able to learn it at like a master level or like, you know, let me go apply for jobs in this subject matter, but you can probably learn it enough to get started as it relates to your business.
Yes.
And then, you know, there's so many resources available to small businesses that just knowing how to find those resources is also helpful. So in my case, remember, I left my job, gave them a month's notice, wasn't planning on starting a business. It just so happened that I had already had my website and it looked horrible, but I had a website.
Yeah.
And the company that I host my website on was doing like a 3-month marketing intensive for a select few companies that were hosting their business on their platform. So I applied and I was like the last one to get in, like the last person they accepted was me. So I left my company, my 9-to-5 job. And then the next thing I went into was this 3-month marketing program through my web hosting company. I don't have a marketing background at all. So I was able to learn some like basics in marketing and things that kind of got me through and gave me structure, right? I was still used to going to a place, clocking in, clocking out. So it was nice for me to be able to segue into a situation like that because it didn't feel so foreign. I was still waking up and, you know, heading out the house and being productive and networking with, you know, other business owners now, some of which I still know years later, and able to like learn from people who had been doing this for some time, whereas I'm on literally day one, day two. The other thing that I'm also really good at is like asking people for help when I need it. Mm-hmm. I'm not too ashamed to ask for help. Networking with any and everybody, because you never know what question they might be able to answer or how they can help you or how you can help them.
Right.
And contribute back to the collective. And then I remember from like years ago living in like a whole nother city, the Small Business Administration has what's called a SCORE, SCORE office in most major cities, most cities. And what the SCORE office is it's a branch of the Small Business Administration, and their sole job is to give free mentoring to business owners. All you have to do is just, you know, go on the website and make an appointment, find the location that's in your city, make an appointment and show up at the date and time of the appointment. Obviously, because it's COVID now, the appointments are all over Zoom or just through email. But the benefit of it is whatever topic you need help in, so wholesale, marketing, you know, website development, graphic design, whatever the topic is, they have former CEOs and, you know, owners of companies who are retired now, offering up for free their advice in that subject matter.
Wow.
So I lived at the SCORE office once my little 3-month marketing program was over. I lived at the SCORE office and really found kind of a strategy that I thought would work, and thinking outside of the box with like marketing and events, and, you know, learning how to plan an event and how to brand and how to put my stamp on all the things that I touch so that it looks cohesive. How to run my business like a business, even though at the time it was just me, and how to look competitive with brands that have been in the business much longer than me. But maybe the customer doesn't know that, you know, they're looking online. They don't know who started yesterday and who started 10 years ago. And they're comparing you to your competitors, whether you know it or not, whether it's fair or not.
Mm-hmm.
So just like doing things like that. And then that kind of, I noticed that every opportunity that I created for myself, and every time I made myself vulnerable and put myself in a situation, it almost always spun into something else. Like, so through the SCORE office, they suggested that I apply for, I self-nominate for a small business award. And I did, and I won. So now I have this small business administration award, which I can always say, you know, I'm a small business administration award winner. And for a small business, that really does kind of set you apart. And anyone that wants to do business with me at least knows, well, this kid is at least professional, right? Like, she might have a small team and it might only be 2 or 3 of them, but I know that they know enough about business that it's not going to make it be messy or, you know, unprofessional for me to do business with them. And then that led into me applying for an incubator based in Brooklyn. So I did the Brooklyn Fashion Incubator for like 1.5 years. And that led to me applying for the workshop at Macy's, which is like a week-long intensive sponsored by Macy's, where Macy's teaches small brands how to do business with large department stores. And it just kept like spiraling, you know, into new opportunity after opportunity. And I think that's what small businesses really need to get good at, is educating themselves, finding information, and creating opportunities that can magnify themselves beyond the current situation that you're in. Because while you're in this entrepreneurial role, you're still building a resume for yourself. You're still creating and defining your business as a business and yourself as a professional in that space. So your decisions need to be good for today and for tomorrow and for next year.
Yes. I think that you raised so many really great points about not only, you know, what it takes into achieving starting a business, but really any goal, like any goal that feels really far out of a person's reach. You know, first and foremost, I love that you talked about the information. We have access to all of this information. It's free. It's at our fingertips. I mean, you can literally learn how to do anything. I agree with you 100%. And then, you know, networking and creating opportunities, and, you know, you're not going to know the next 10 steps, but you can find the next 1 or 2 steps, and that's going to continue to snowball and lead you to, you know, where you are, you know, aiming to go. And I love that. I think that anyone listening to this can take those principles and apply that to anything.
Yeah. And it's totally doable. You know, like my husband and I are always joking that, you know, we learn all this like major information off of YouTube and Google. Like, I'm an expert Googler. Like, I'm so good at asking Google questions and getting the precise answer that I'm looking for. Like, it's that level. Like, I don't know everything, but I know how to Google very, very well.
Yes.
And for all intents and purposes, you know, that's really all I need to figure out is how to do a good search and where to find it.
I mean, that someone is out there who's done it also. And so I'm a big fan of online courses, especially when it relates to online business, which is what I'm learning about. And there's so many people out there that have done it, and their results that they have prove that. And so I find people and I take their courses and I learn so much from them, and it's amazing. And I mean, that not just for business, but people are sharing information out there, like digital products and things for everything, cooking and knitting and do it yourself and home decor and just starting a business, anything, you know, parenting, just everything. So
everything.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, that's kind of the spirit that you should have when starting a business. And I, whenever I meet someone that's like doubtful, I tell them this, like, so during COVID, I saw on the news, this woman that was making like outdoor benches for squirrels and doing very well at it.
Yeah.
So like if there's a market for people buying squirrels for tables for squirrels in their backyard, you know, and if she's listening, great idea, kudos to you.
Right.
You know, there any business is a viable business. You just have to be able to conduct it as a business.
Right.
And you should try. It's I think the world benefits when we try to do things, particularly women. You know, there needs to be more women in business so that we're changing the narrative of what business ownership looks like and who is a business owner and who a captain of industry looks like. Like,
yes.
Why can't it be, you know, a woman? Why can't it be a young woman? Why right. can't it be a woman who's still in college? Like, mm-hmm. why can't it be a 15-year-old, you know, young girl?
Right.
Why can't, you know, the world needs our ideas and the yeah. world, you know, needs us. And I don't, you know, there's 12 million swimwear companies, probably more. And I still decided to create one. You know, there's so many educational courses and I still chose to write one. And there's, you know, there's Coca-Cola and there's Pepsi and there's Popeyes and there's KFC and there's Nike and there's Adidas. And all of these people are still doing well, even though there's a competitor that's doing the same thing that they do.
Yeah, I firmly believe that there is room for everyone. And also, I firmly believe in the fact that since each person or business is unique and you have your own experiences, your perspective on the topic is going to be completely different. And that is going to resonate with some people and it's not going to resonate with others, and that's fine. And so I think just, you know, more importantly, it's just going out there and providing to the world what you have to offer and being authentic, because, you know, those people that love the message that you have or your perspective, they're going to want to buy from you or work with you or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on that note, so we're wrapping this up. We're running out of time. I could just keep this going for hours and hours, but, one of my questions is, what do you do each day or each week or regularly to really re-energize or fill your cup up after you are just feeling stressed or drained or overwhelmed?
I'm a really big advocate of self-care. So my lifestyle, I think, is kind of conducive to that question and continually, you know, adding energy back to the supply. I make sure that I get a good night's rest. If I don't get a good night's rest, then I make sure that I try to get a nap the next day, even if it's only like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I try to drink, you know, plenty of water. I stretch. I work out regularly. I eat pretty healthy. And I have boundaries, you know, like I'm not going to work around the clock all day long. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, in this current world that we're in, I'm not going to work on the weekends. Like, I'm going to focus my work Monday through Friday, probably like 7 to 7 is a realistic amount of time that I'm working during the day. But that's a 12-hour day, you know?
Yeah.
So I have boundaries for myself. And I practice the message that I'm saying to my customers. And the messaging that I'm saying to the world. I try to love myself. You know, I give myself facials and I paint my nails and I rest when I feel like I need a rest. And I try to laugh. I think laughter is so important. And I try to enjoy life and my family and this journey that I'm on, because, you know, it's not, it's important to me, but it's not everything. It's not, you know, and I think we could all like do with a reminder that there's probably more important things going on in the world than the things that are going on in our world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to be grateful for the opportunities that we each have to create these dreams of ours, and understand that that's a privilege, because there's someone somewhere in the world that would love the opportunity to, you know, create their own podcast or create their own fashion brand and live life on their terms, and they don't have that. So I think just being really appreciative for the life that you're able to lead, and not taking it for granted, and you know, actually, you know, being mindful of that and practicing that in your mindfulness journals or your meditation or your prayer, however it is that you go about giving thanks and showing thanks. I think it's just really important to just take care of ourselves mentally, yes, physically, spiritually.
Yes. All of those things, like everything you're saying, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I love all of that. It's so important. And I just really love how even that approach to business and work is shifting a little, where there's more of a focus on taking care of yourself. Like, yes, working hard and giving it your all, but also we need to care for ourselves. If you like look, I don't know exactly what the statistic is, but for, you know, men who are CEOs or, you know, in high positions in companies, so many of them have heart attacks or they get heart disease, and, you know, all that stress and not sleeping and just poor diets and all of those things, you know, obviously that doesn't work. That's not a great way to live your life. And that's not how I want to be. So I think that is so, so important. And yeah, with that, first of all, I feel really great right now. This was really refreshing and I feel inspired by your story. I love it. Please tell everyone how they can find your brand, connect with you, learn more, and, you know, whatever it is you want to share.
Thank you so much. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and I love talking about all these things, and I could definitely talk about it longer. Yeah, you can go to the website. I think the website kind of directs you to everything that's going on in my world from there. The website is www.nichyl.com, nichyl.com. You can sign up for the newsletter and stay up to date with what I've got going on. You can read my blog that I resurrected just last week. You can look at the products. I've got a new collection launching on Cinco de Mayo, so you can head to the site on May 5th and see some fun new things. And I'm very active on Instagram, and I'm on Clubhouse too. I do a lot of free chats on Clubhouse where I'm specifically giving advice to small business owners, and I usually interview one person at a time. So I'll probably follow up with an email and ask if you want to chat with me on Clubhouse about podcasting.
Yes.
And I just, me and an expert in that field talk about, you know, that topic, and we give value to people who are just starting out. So yesterday the topic was Instagram growth. And tomorrow we're talking about business finances with a whole nother person. So
that's great. I love Clubhouse. Yeah.
Love it.
I know. It's so fun.
Great place to network. Great place to, like, again, like we echoed before, just learning information. There's so much information that people are giving away for free on Clubhouse. So it's a really good place to get information. I'm at Nick Hill on Clubhouse if anyone ever wants to tune in for any of those chats.
Yes. And I am going to link all, you know, your Instagram, your website, your Clubhouse, whatever you'd like people to know, I will link in the show notes. So definitely go check her out. Thank you so much, Nick Hill. And hopefully I will connect with you soon.
Thank you so much, Kristen. I can't wait. I'm super excited. Thanks for the opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked this episode of the Her One Thing podcast, you will love the ultimate goal setting blueprint I created just for you. This blueprint is an absolute must if you're ready to get serious about the one thing you can't stop thinking about. You know, that one thing that keeps you up at night because you want to do it so bad, but you just don't know how to get started? Well, trust me, I have been there. That's why I've created this free blueprint so you can get started on your one thing right away. Head over to itsthatonething.com and check it out. Until next time, let's get inspired.